Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The show goes on. This is the official show on the Fish on First podcast channel with me, Eli Sussman. I'm the founder of this beautiful entity, Fish on First, providing you guys with complete Miami Marlins coverage. The FOF podcast is now being presented by MPT College Consulting. More about them later in the show. I am hustling to record this episode of the official show because I have to catch a flight to South Florida. For anybody that is not aware, I am not based in South Florida. I'm based in New York. Most of my staff is local to the Marlins. And for the next week through March 18th, I will be in and around Jupiter. So covering the Marlins Major League, Grapefruit League spring training games, all along the backfields, looking at the prospects. And I just look forward to seeing a bunch of people in the organization. But of course, most importantly, those men and women that support us and what we do at FOF. So if you're going to be at any of those games, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, yeah, thankfully it lines up in such a way that the Marlins are at Roger Dean Chevrolet Stadium for a bunch of this period of time. I look forward to meeting up, talking, hearing what you have to say about what we're building here at FOF and what we could do to improve. You want to say nice things? You want to give us criticism? You can now say it straight to my face on most days during this upcoming week. Really looking forward to that. It's a trip I've made the last couple years, and I think I'll be making it indefinitely because this is a perfect time of year for me to get down there and get caught up on being on the ground myself. So this show was actually inspired by Stan Mikowski. He is one of our super subs. So just a reminder, if you become a super sub for as little as $4 a month, this is when you make suggestions, I put a little bit more weight into them than I might otherwise. And Stan kind of innocently brought this up. I don't think he intended for it to become content on its own, but it is. In an email conversation, he was talking about AJ Puck and Ryan Weathers in whatever order you want to put them in. They've been the two biggest revelations of Marlins camp here in 2024. Both of them in prime position to make the Marlins opening day rotation, especially Puck, but I think both of them have a good path to it. And as he pointed out, Stan pointed out, both of them were acquired under Kim Ng in trades, in relatively low profile trades as well. And now those two guys are going to have a much larger impact on this upcoming season than anybody would have imagined when they were acquired just last year. It doesn't mean that they're guaranteed to succeed, but for the moment, both of those deals are looking pretty efficient for the Marlins. And I thought it was a good time to bring that up, to revisit some Kim Ng's decisions. And again, a reminder to become a super sub yourself, fishonfirst.com/subscriptions. Also, there's a sidebar on pretty much every page of the site. So even if you don't go to this section directly, when you're anywhere on the site, you'll see the available subscriptions listed there, either monthly or annually. Your support is really greatly appreciated. Another reason why I think this is good timing to dive into this is that the latest farm system rankings from MLB Pipeline came out, and they are perfectly aligned with all the other farm system rankings. Every major outlet over recent weeks was updated their rankings of minor league talents across baseball, has had the Marlins no higher than 27th. All of them pretty well lined up. This is one of the very weakest farm systems, which, if you remember correctly, earlier in the offseason, that was pointed to as kind of the sticking point with Kim and the big weakness of her administration. There's a trend for people of you watching on YouTube, all these episodes posted over there on our YouTube channel, Pipeline was pretty high on the Marlins system just 2 years ago. They had them ranked sixth out of 30 teams entering 2022 that fell to 16th in their midseason update in 2022, then 18th just a year ago, 24th at midseason last year, and now 29th, second weakest farm system ahead of only the Los Angeles Angels. So some of that had to do with Kim's trades and the fact that she was aggressive in making deals that were focused on short-term improvement and sacrificed some controllable long-term pieces in that in order to make those type of deals. So some of that was her direct doing to reduce things. At the same time, you know, as we can rehash again and again and again, the team made the postseason last year. It was an extraordinary achievement considering what the expectations were entering that year. And several of her other trades have been like widely praised or were very popular at the time, and that you could really see like the direct impact they had on the 2023 Marlins. Luis Arraez being the big one, having the fantastic year that he had upon arriving to the team from Minnesota. Then at the trade deadline last year, when this team seemed to be running out of steam and needed some reinforcements, especially offensively, she got both Jake Berger from the White Sox and Josh Bell from the Guardians. Both of them pretty immediately showed that they were like going to be important pieces of the team, and they fit very well both on and off the field with the Marlins down the stretch. And as it turns out, Josh Bell, after a little bit of hesitation, he did exercise his player option, so they get an entire 2024 season of Bell in there, as well as Berger being now under control for the long haul. So the Marlins traded prospects in order to get those as well, and those were easier to appreciate just because they plugged holes in this lineup that the team knew was a weakness, and because their results were so immediately extraordinary. Going back, or I should say fast forwarding to where we are right now, we need to talk about how Puck and Ryan Weathers came to be in this organization, because those are the guys now looking forward to 2024. Yeah, their impact on this team is going to be immense. Whether it goes well or not, we don't know, because Weathers to this point in his career has had awful results at the major league level. Puck has had solid results, but as a reliever, and now he is transitioning to this entirely different role. These were still part of her tenure right here. And as I made pretty clear at the time, I was not in favor of the Marlins essentially breaking up with her and them moving on from her after only three seasons at the helm, instead of finding some sort of way moving forward, rather than, as noted with, you know, there are very significant concerns about how it is that the Marlins were aligned in the player development front. And it was looking really unlikely that they were going to be able to replicate their 2023 success unless they made substantial changes on that front. But reasonable people can make adjustments, and I just find it so hard to believe that they weren't able to find a path forward where Kim would make certain alterations to her front office personnel and to her philosophies in order to create a more sustainable way of improving minor league players. Like, it felt like there should have been some sort of compromise they could have found. They didn't find it. Kim, at least for now, not employed by a major league team. We'll see exactly where that goes. Wishing her all the best. So yeah, we move forward. But right before we do, yeah, it is important just to look at the process that brought those guys here, because now they are going to be so critical to what the team does, at least in 2024. And if things go well, both of these guys, several years of club control, even beyond 2024. From baseball trade values, we get a general idea of why it is that, you know, these trades weren't quite as interesting at the time. They weren't sexy trades at the time just because of the relatively low value that all the players involved have. What baseball trade values does is they calculate a surplus value that every player in baseball has relative to what they're being paid, how long they're under club control, and most importantly, the production that they provide. You know, how much value do they think they have in the market? The Puck trade, February 11th, 2023, was a straight up one for one with the Oakland A's acquiring Puck for JJ Blade. Both of those guys, a shade over $4 million in surplus value. And that deal was accepted by the baseball trade values model. It's hard to be more perfectly aligned than that. $4.1 million value for Puck, 4.2 for Blade. And that's kind of why I like this site, for the flaws that it has and some of the questionable behavior that it encourages because of its trade simulator. Like, this is, it is ordinarily very hard to compare a good major league reliever with a former first, a formerly highly regarded prospect outfielder who struggled in his debut season. It's completely different roles, different amount of club control. And I think their formulas do a generally good job of incorporating all those factors in order to spit out this one simple number right there. And that trade was very popular at the time, because Puck was coming off a very productive 2023 season in the A's pen. He'd pitched some high leverage innings. It looked relatively sustainable in that role. Whereas Blade, as I referenced, he was awful in his first taste of the majors in 2023, and essentially throughout his entire minor league career in the Marlins organization from mid-2019 on, it was just clear that he wasn't as well-rounded a player, and most concerningly, not as well-rounded a hitter as they had envisioned him being when they actually selected him as the number 4 overall pick in that draft class. His first year in the Marlins organization as a major leaguer, he hit 167, 586 OPS, only 5 home runs in 65 games. So I think the thinking there was that Puck could continue to be a good reliever, if not get a little bit better, whereas Blade was, the ceiling realistically was a solid platoon outfielder, corner outfielder, and that the floor was that he simply wouldn't be able to hit enough in the big leagues to have any role whatsoever right there. That was a relatively popular one at the time, and especially early on last season when Puck emerged as the Marlins closer. He was great in that role for the first month plus, first quarter or so of the 2023 regular season. Then there was the injury. Then there was the brutal midseason slump where he couldn't keep the ball in the ballpark. And then by the end of the year, he was pitching in medium leverage situations. He was a bit piece of the true postseason push during the second half of the season. And then the second trade was Ryan Weathers at this past trade deadline, trading away Garrett Cooper and Sean Reynolds. And that was personally painful for me because I went out on a limb with Sean Reynolds as being one of my handpicked guys that I thought was a little bit better than most talent evaluators gave him credit for, trading those two to the Padres for Weathers. And Cooper was a pending free agent, so his value was just $500,000 surplus. Sean Reynolds was, in BTV's estimation, the most valuable piece of the deal, $1.5 million in surplus value. Whereas Weathers, he was so unsuccessful early in his pro career, in his major league career, that they had him as a total neutral piece, almost one with zero value relative to what he was being paid in his club control, meaning that they didn't seem all that much different from a DFA candidate. And so this trade, from my observation, was not particularly popular at the time when it was made on deadline day in 2023, because the Marlins knew they needed some rotation depth assistance down the stretch of the year. And Weathers, to that point in his career, a 5.73 ERA, a 69 ERA plus, 31% worse than league average. So prone to giving up homers, not missing nearly enough bats as his stuff would suggest. And he just wasn't any better in 2023 than he had been his prior two seasons in the big leagues. He was, to that point in the year, he had started 10 games and pitched in 12 of them. It was just a really questionable fit with where the team was at the time. So I think the thinking, at least the way that I saw it in the moment, is that it was an attempt to do a light version of the Jesus Luzardo acquisition, which was also a Kimang trade, by the way, but we're not going to talk about this on this show. They saw a guy that was a very hard-throwing lefty, great prospect pedigree, still extremely young, only 23 years old at the time of the trade, who had a bunch of club control remaining, and that perhaps with an off-season of adjustments could come back and look like a much different version of himself, the way that Luzardo struggled a lot in his first stint with the Marlins and then came back the very next year and was all of a sudden a really good major league starting pitcher. But at the time, it just didn't seem like Weathers would provide any value down the stretch for the Marlins. And spoiler alert, he just didn't. He barely pitched in the big leagues. He looked good in AAA Jacksonville, but not dramatically enough changes to make you think that he was really going to move the needle for the Marlins or be trusted to win high leverage games down the stretch. His best performance came in game 162, which was the least important game of the entire Marlins season, because that was when they'd already clinched a postseason berth. He pitched very well, but with absolutely no stakes involved, it was hard to know one way or another what it is that was really going to justify making that deal, why he was the pick instead of them going for a more conventional veteran starting pitcher at the time. So that one, the pieces involved, not all things considered, just not a whole lot at stake there, because Cooper himself was having a down year. He was a pending free agent, and Sean Reynolds hadn't had any big league experience at that point. He was a reliever only candidate right there. But that deal also accepted by baseball trade values, with Marlins sending out $2 million in value and getting back zero. But that is within the margin for error in their model going right around. On the other side of the break, I do want to talk about why it is that now these guys are making waves during spring training. And again, how this goes back to moves that Kim Eng made, even though she is no longer with the Marlins organization. She doesn't get to directly benefit from that. This is the first show where we are now being brought to you by MPT College Consulting. At MPT, they pride themselves on helping clients navigate the college application process. This includes preparation for standardized testing, guidance through high school, assistance with essays and applications, and choosing the right college. Their work is always geared toward the specific needs of the individual client as they strive to make this process as stress-free for the family as possible. Visit them today at mptcollegeconsulting.com to learn more about their services and schedule a free consultation. As we return here on the official show, talking about Puck and Weathers and how they got here in the first place and how the outlook on them has changed so suddenly entering their first, well, now for Puck, his second full year in the organization, with Weathers, his first full year, but heading into now this part of we're only 2+ weeks away from opening day, and Puck is looking like a virtual lock to be one of the Marlins starting pitchers. And Ryan Weathers, he is doing absolutely everything in his power to secure one of the back end spots behind Puck, especially with, as I'm recording this, still a little bit of uncertainty in terms of what is going on with Edward Cabrera and his shoulder, whether or not that will cost him his availability on opening day. As I mentioned in official news this morning on fishonfirst.com, anything related to a shoulder is typically followed by a period of non-throwing in order for that discomfort to leave before you even resume. And for a starting pitcher, one who's not quite stretched out all the way for the regular season yet, yeah, I would say it's unlikely that Cabrera is going to be available when things break camp in a few weeks, and that Weathers is primed to benefit from that. So with Puck, as I recapped a few moments ago, you know, his first season with the Marlins was mixed overall, got off to that great start, had that big slump in the middle. All things considered, he was certainly a plus for their bullpen, which as a whole pitched really well in high leverage situations, finished with a 3.97 ERA, 3.59 FIP in 56 and two-thirds innings. He saved 15 games, showed a lot of swing and miss ability. Nearly a third of the batters he faced struck out, and really good control as well. So then we got news, as first reported by our own Isaac Azut, that Puck was going to be stretched out as a starting pitcher entering the 2024 spring training. And so that caught a lot of people by surprise, just because he was a two-pitch guy last year. He was fastball and he was sweeper, and that was pretty much it. It was occasional changeup in there. But for somebody that was moved to the pen in the first place just because of his durability concerns as a minor leaguer with the Oakland A's, as recently as 2021, he entered that camp trying to crack their rotation, and he got hurt right towards the end of camp, or right shortly after camp broke, I believe. And that was even years after undergoing Tommy John surgery. There was just, this is not an unusual story about a pitcher that even is, they're extremely talented. They check a lot of boxes you look for in a starter. In Puck's case, having a massive 6'7" frame, looks like a guy that would certainly be able to endure a big workload. And yet time and time again, he's missed a lot of time due to injury. He's only had one season in his entire professional career, which dates back to 2016. He's only had one season in there where he's topped 100 innings or even come close to that number as well. What stood out pretty quickly upon camp starting is the breadth of his pitch mix, his repertoire, going from essentially being a two-pitch guy last year, coming to camp having a five-pitch mix. He's very proud of that. He's mentioned it a couple times, and you can now see why in game action. He's got the four-seamer and a sinker, a cutter, a sweeper, and yeah, now this splitter. He's changed the changeup to a splitter, and it looks really great in the limited action we've seen from him so far. When these guys get stretched out, the question is how much velocity do they maintain that they had in the pen? He's had a mid-90s fastball as a reliever, occasionally touching the high 90s. And so far in spring training action, he is sitting pretty comfortably, 93, 94, 95. So down a tiny bit, but still above average from a left-handed pitcher's perspective. And for somebody that has that deep pitch mix, and really most importantly as a starter, is able to command those pitches. That's what stood out for me when looking at his pitch mapping through his first couple outings, is that every pitch that he was able to throw he's able to put it either in the zone or just throw competitive pitches along the corners of the zone as well in order to get chases from that. So like there's still a couple more tune-ups to go, but like I see the vision right here. Like this is extremely encouraging. The durability question is an unknowable one in terms of how much he's going to hold up because of how little precedent he has handling major workload over the course of the season. Like it seems really doubtful that he's going to make 30 starts for the Marlins this year. They may have to, even as he'll be 29 years old this season, there's going to be some sort of innings limit, you would think, just because he's not been conditioned to pitch anywhere close to what a normal starter would over the course of the year. But early on this season, like I just have a little reason to doubt that he's going to be good immediately once the real games get underway. So I'm so confident that he was one of my bold predictions on Fish Unfiltered. If you haven't seen that, you can find this on the same channel as you're watching and listening to now with Kevin Baral and Isaac Gazoo. One of my five bold predictions was that Puck is going to be a MLB All-Star selection this year. Doesn't mean that he's going to be the ace of the rotation, and doesn't mean it's going to last the entire year. But I mean, but just because of all the boxes that he does check as a starter, as long as he is healthy, like this just seems to be a really well-rounded starting pitcher. It is, I guess, just due to the timing of the trade last year, and given who they had in place already, there was not really a strong desire, it seemed, to test him as a starter at any point last year. Yeah, and in hindsight, that would have made the second half of their season a lot less stressful, right? If they had stretched him out as a starter when they were throwing Johnny Cueto out there and Brian Hoeing, no offense to those guys, and maybe they should have been more open-minded in the middle of last season. And I guess you could put that against Kim Eng, but overall, just the acquisition of him, which at the moment addressed a very pressing need for high leverage relievers entering the 2023 season, but also with the potential to become something a whole lot more than that. Forget becoming an all-star. If he is just an average starting pitcher, ERA around four, able to go five and a third innings per outing, like there's going to be so immense value to him. We go back to that, the BTV, baseball trade values estimation of what he had at the time, $4.1 million in median trade value for somebody now who still has three full years of club control. Well, let's fast forward like to the trade deadline this upcoming year. If all the Marlins starters or most of them get healthy at that time, if you have a couple prospect breakouts and the Marlins feel like, hey, we finally have the immense depth that we thought we would, we are ready to trade one of these guys for a bat. Instead of $4 million, if Puck is just an average starter who's on so underpaid due to during his arbitration years and still has control through 2026, that number is going to go from 4 million to 40 million. Like, that is not unreasonable that he can make that kind of jump if he performs the way that I think he's going to perform during the early portion of the season, and the type of player you'll be able to get if you have a $40 million surplus trade asset, the type of controllable impact hitter, potentially at a up the middle position that Marlins could get in return, is the kind of guy that they have not been able to acquire for years. And the one that, you know, they still have long-term questions about what they're doing at catcher and at shortstop. And this is something that indirectly, because of the trade that was made under Ng at this time last year, like they could come out way on top, even if they are just taking this experiment month by month or part of the season by part of a season. So yeah, just to keep that into perspective in terms of how radically these values change, I think at this moment, without even looking, I think Puck's value has already jumped up closer to 20 million. So even if they moved him right now, like even if that on the verge of the season, they wanted to capitalize on the excitement, they would be able to get a pretty significant bat or several in return for Puck. Much different circumstances than when they acquired him. And as a reminder, with Weathers, in his case, barely any value at the time, by most estimations, due to how badly he was performing in the major leagues so far in his season, the fact that they had already used up a couple of his minor league options. So entering 2024, he has only one option remaining, despite still being so young. But all he's done this spring is lead baseball in strikeouts as a starting pitcher. He has 17 Ks so far this spring. He's already been stretched out to five innings. He's faced a couple decent lineups, most recently a not-so-decent Astros lineup as well, with the quality of competition, and it's not a great read on it. And in his case, the pitch mix is not quite as deep as Puck's, but he's probably at four reliable pitches to this point, the new addition being a sinker in addition to his four-seamer, and already having that slider. And I think he is also throwing some sort of split change at this point, perhaps a slightly different off-speed pitch than he had last year and prior in his major league career. The big storyline with him has been the four-seamer. It's been the uptick in velo. And I listened to an interview that he did recently where he described that velo bump coming in even before the trade, going from sitting 93, 94 to 96. And now this spring, it's been even a little bit better than that. It's been a lot of 97, and not so rare for him to pump 98 from the left side and locate it really well. So his ability to locate it up in the zone more consistently than we've seen in the past, and for him to now be he already had, I think, decent control of his stuff, but I think this stuff now complements each other a little bit better. The fact that he has that secondary fastball and a sinker that he can locate elsewhere to change eye levels and to give him a better chance, at least against right-handed batters, because for just as with any lefty, they're going to be at the platoon disadvantage for most of their matchups going on. I'd say I'm more confident in Puck right away than I am in Weathers. But both of them, again, just considering where they are right now, to have any degree of confidence, them being solid starters, has skyrocketed their value based on what it was perceived to be at the time of acquisition. So even if he's not like a ton better than he has been prior in his major league career, for him to be able to eat innings is valuable. That in itself is a rare commodity, being able to eat innings. And again, the Marlins learned that the hard way last year about how difficult it was to patch together some of these games. And with Weathers, there's just not a whole lot of reason to doubt that he can put things together in a more complete way than he ever has earlier in his career. The Luzardo comp is still very bold, and I was not willing to go there. I know Kevin was. Kevin had him being an all-star as one of his bold predictions. I'm not quite on that train at this moment. Even so, you can see the outline of a really good starting pitcher who has decent size himself. It's not quite Puck strength to him, but durability has been more on his side. I mean, an interesting factor is that he's coming off a year where he ate a bunch of innings between AAA and the majors. If you combine his work with the Padres, the Marlins, and in AAA, Ryan Weathers pitched 137 and a third innings last year. This is somebody that over the course of the 2024 season, like, he may be able to actually make those 30 starts as opposed to Puck. So things do go decently for him. He could be a high-end number five starting pitcher, if not something more than that. But for just look around baseball and see what that type of player is going for in free agency, for example. There was Jack Flaherty got like $13 million guaranteed, something like that, in free agency. Lance Lynn got over $10 million. I think Kyle Gibson got over $10 million for just 1 year of control over those guys. If Weathers can simply be on that level of pitcher, I mean, you have him under control for 5 years, all the way through 2028, at least. And that's if they don't even send him down to the minors and limit his service time a little bit. That is what makes these particular trades so impressive. And the upside so immense is because of the years of club control that go beyond just the immediate term. So even hopefully, you know, both of them can continue to get better and improve as they get more accustomed to these roles. But the flexibility to actually have them under control and controlled at such an efficient cost, whether they contribute directly to the Marlins or whether they're eventually traded down the road to help with that dire farm system situation, like that's part of the path to get this team back in a place where they develop talent more consistently. The most important thing under Peter Bendix is going to be that the people that he hired in his player development roles are going to institute better practices, more effectively integrate technology to help these players find the best version of themselves, to recognize what they're doing wrong and how to optimize that, how to find consistency. And I think that is almost, that might be the easy part, just because the Marlins were pretty lacking in those departments when it came to leveraging technology to make their players better and providing them with all the tools they need to really analyze and understand what they do well and what they do poorly. This other part of actually having players with huge value that you can leverage in any sort of ways as part of your team moving forward, or as players to be sent elsewhere to improve in other areas, like that's going to continue to pay off big time. So yeah, there's been a lot of talk about Lizardo this offseason, and he falls under the same bucket as a player that was acquired for a rental Starling Marte in 2021. And now the Marlins listened closely on dealing him. And they probably had some pretty salivating offers for him that were many multiples more valuable than a rental veteran would have been to acquire him at the time, but didn't pull the trigger. And these options are available to this new front office because of the trades that Kim Ng made during her relatively brief tenure as a Marlins GM. I thought it was important to reflect on that. So this has been Eli Sussman on The Official Show, episode 215, recording here right before catching my flight down to South Florida to cover the next week or so of Marlins action. I think we'll be recording some sort of pod while I'm down there. I might record The Official Show again on Monday right before leaving town. I hope to see a lot of you guys down there between now and then, and excited about gathering some more intel and hands-on observations about this team while down there that I think will better inform our coverage as we close on quickly to opening day. One more plug to become a super sub, fishonfirst.com/subscriptions. Thank you to Stan, super sub Stan, for inspiring this episode with his message about those trades and looking at it from a slightly different angle right there. But thanks to everybody that supports what we do. Really getting close to the real stuff, more than halfway through Marlins spring training at this point. I hope you continue listening. Once again, brought by MPT College Consulting. Check them out, mptcollegeconsulting.com. I'll be talking to you guys again real soon. Check out all our coverage on the main website. Follow us on social media. rate and review Fish on First, the podcast, wherever you get your podcast, to spread the word and let more people know that we are covering this Marlins team as completely as we possibly can. Go Fish.